Welcome back to the Rav Hirsch on Parsha series on OU Torah. This week we'll be studying Rav Hirsch's commentary to Parsha's Shlach. And we begin at the very beginning of the Parsha, where Hashem gives Moshe Rabbeinu the command to send spies to Eretz Yisrael to scout out the land. And Rav Hirsch, without mentioning Rashi specifically, rejects Rashi's idea about the meaning of the word lecha, where Rashi famously says that shalach lecha means send for yourself. Rashi says ledatcha, for your own purposes. But ani eini mitzav lecha, I will not command you to do so. The Tirtza, if you wish to send, then shalach, go ahead and do so. Meaning that Hashem did not agree with this idea of sending the spies, and when the people requested it, Hashem said, well, do it if you want, I'm not telling you what to do. So Rav Hirsch says that L'cha does not meant that, Rav Hirsch does not agree with that understanding of L'cha, and says that L'cha does not mean that Hashem was not commanding Moshe to do it, just like we had in last week's parasha, Asei L'cha Shtei Chatzotzros Kesef, that Hashem told Moshe to make for yourself these trumpets, or in Parshas Kisisa, Hashem tells Moshe, Kach L'cha B'samim Rosh, to take for yourself these spices and make a Shemen HaMishcha for the Mishkan, but it's a full out commandment. It's here as well. Hashem gives Moshe Rabbeinu a directive to send Meraglim to Eretz Kanaan, and we see this as well later on in Pasuk Gimel where the Pasuk says Vayishlach Hashem Moshe Yimidbar Paran Al Pi Hashem, that Moshe sent them by the command of Hashem. So Rav Hirsch says this must have been commanded by Hashem as well. The difference is, though, Rav Hirsch says that the Hashem's objective was slightly different than that of the people's, and Hashem attempted to take the people's request for spies, and show them what the spies should look for specifically, and change that, as Rav Hirsch now shows. He shows, in fact, that from part of the account of Parshas Dvarim of the spies, we see that the people arrived at this point in Kadesh Barnea, which is right on the border of Eretz Canaan, and they were right there, ready to go into the land. And the people asked Moshe to send a group of men, and they said, V'yachperu lanu es ha'aretz. And it first says that V'yachperu, which means to spy, out, to scout, which a similar expression is used in Sefer Yoshua in the Haftorah this week, when Yoshua sent his spies to Yericho. He explains that Yach Peru comes from the Shorosh of Chofar. Chofar meaning to dig. And the idea is that something is hidden, there is no information about the land, and so they wanted to dig up some information about the details of the land. And there they explain they want to know how to find the best route to enter the land, to know more about the cities, to familiarize themselves with the terrain and what they're up against in advance of the campaign to conquer Eretz Canaan. And Moshe himself says there that Vayita Be'enei Adavar, that Moshe was pleased with the request and said thought it was okay, because he understood that once they entered Eretz Canaan, they would no longer be guided by miracles. They would lead a natural existence. And he understood the need to understand what the life was going to be like in Eretz Yisrael, what the battles were going to be like. And in fact, we saw in last week's parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu himself consulted Yisrael and wanted Yisrael to be there. That Yisrael would be some sort of an advisory capacity with his knowledge of Eretz Canaan and the lay of the land. So we see from the account in Devarim that the request seemed to be reasonable. So Rav Hirsch cites the Sforno on this pasuk in our parsha, that the difference between Shlach Lecha that the Hashem said, and the people's request, is that Hashem designated specific people to go. The people had said, as we read in Sefer Parshas Devarim, that the people said, Nishlecha Noshim Lefanim, let us send men before us of their own choosing, and Hashem said, you send people, but you send the specific people, Ishachad, Ishachad, Lamatei Avosav, Kol Nasi Bohem, you send these specific people that I deem qualified. And so we see Hashem acceded to their demands, but in a he wanted things done in a slightly different manner. And this is symbolized by his idea of sending, or one, what this was, we see this in the fact that Hashem sent his own people. And Hashem describes the mission differently as well. The people said, "V'yachperu lanu es ha'aretz." Hashem said, "Shlach lecha anoshim v'yosuru es eretz Kanaan." V'yosuru is another expression that refers to scouting out or spying, but it has a slightly different meaning. Because rather than meaning finding, digging up information, we find the expression lasur. Elsewhere, where it typically refers to finding out, finding something suitable for the intended purpose. For example, last week's parsha, we said that the Aron traveled ahead of the people, lasur lahem menucha, to find a suitable place for them to camp, to rest. And in Parshas Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu also describes the advanced travel of ahead of them of the cloud and the Aron is lasur lachem makom lachanoschem, to scout out a place for you to camp. But here it's not just digging up information, but it's finding specific aspects of what lies ahead that will suit their purposes. And in fact, we find this expression used in connection with Eretz Yisrael specifically, in the sense of Hashem selecting Eretz Yisrael from among all the lands of the world as the holy land for the Jewish people. And we find this description in Sefer Yechezkel, where the Navi says, "Eretz asher tarti lohem zavas chalav udvash tzvihu l'chol ha'aretzos." The land asher tarti lohem, that I picked out for them from among all the other lands, is the land flowing with milk and honey, is the choicest of all lands. So it is something that is noticed for a specific purpose. So we see how now, with this understanding of the difference between v'yasuru and v'yachbru, how Hashem's request that v'yasuru es ha'aretz changed the mission from what Klal Yisrael asked for. They're not just now searching out strategically, trying to get information on the land, how to conquer the land. That wasn't the important point here. The important point of the Asuru was to see how the land would be suitable for them, for their spiritual development, for Hashem's purposes. And reverses, we see this as well in the way in which Hashem describes the land. When he says, "V'yasuru es eretz Kanaan asher ani nosein l'vnei Yisrael," they should scout out the land of Canaan that I am giving to Bnei Yisrael. Because the idea is, they should see why I am giving it to them, and how it can be helpful to them in that I give it to them. And the idea is that right now it is eretz Kanaan; it's a land full of inhabitants who do not serve Hashem and are the opposite of what Hashem wants. And soon it will be Hashem Nino Sim Levnei Yisrael, because it can serve their purposes. And then our verse goes on to explain how we see this as well in the questions that Moshe Rabbeinu asks the Meraglim to find answers for. When Moshe Rabbeinu sends out the Meraglim, we see he poses them a series of missives that he wants them to find out more information about. We read in Pasuk Yud Zayin in Parak Yud Gimel, "Vayishlach Hashem Moshe l'Asur etz Eretz Kanaan." Moshe sent them to scout out the land of Canaan. "Vayomer alehem," he said to them, "Aluzeba Negev, v'alisem esahar," right? Go up here in the south and ascend the mountain, meaning go over the mountains that were then in front of Bnei Yisrael. And over the mountains lay Eretz Kanaan. And so he said, go over the mountain and into Eretz Yisrael. Urisem es ha'aretz mahi, and see the land. For what is it? Esa am ha'yoshev aleha, the people who live there. Hechazak hu ha'rafe, are they strong? Are they weak? Hama'at hu imrav, are they few? Are they many? Umo ha'aretz ashehu yoshev ba, what is the land like in which they dwell? Hatovah hi imra'a, is it good? Is it bad? Umo ha'arim ashehu yoshev ba'hena, ha'machanim ibimivtzurim, what are the cities in which they dwell? Are they out in the open, or are they fortified? Umo ha'aretz ha'shmeno hi imrazah, how is the land? Is it fat or lean? Hayesh ba etzim ayin, do they have trees or not? Ve'his chazatem, you should be strong yourselves, u'kachtem pure arts, and then bring back from the fruit of the land, v'ayomim maybe kurean avim, and this time was the time of the ripening of the grapes. But when we see these questions of Moshe Rabbeinu, it seems that they are strategical questions. They're tactical points that Moshe Rabbeinu wants to know. How strong are they? How many are they? Where do they live? What kind of land do they have? And so on. But Rav Hirsch says that that's not necessarily what Moshe Rabbeinu is asking here. And he goes through each question and breaks it down for us to show how they're really questions about the land's capacity as a foundation for spiritual development. For example, he says that the first question, Hechazak hu harofe, is are they strong? Are the people strong? Are the people weak? So Moshe Rabbeinu says this is important to know, but not from a tactical standpoint, not for the purpose of the conquest, but as a Musar lesson to the Jewish people. Are they strong? If they're strong, then the people should understand that these people are corrupt, and no matter how strong they are, Hashem overthrows them. And their downfall is a warning to the Jewish people. They do not follow Hashem in this land. They will pay the price, just as these Canaanim are about to pay the price for their rejection of Hashem, no matter how strong physically they might be, but Hashem will overthrow them. If they are weak, well, then it's a lesson to the Jewish people that these people are weak in this land because they refuse to serve Hashem. And if we serve Hashem, then we will flourish in this land. And that will be the lesson based on Hechazak Hu HaRafa. And both, either regardless of what the answer is, it's important for the Jewish people to recognize this and take the message to heart. The second question Moshe Rabbeinu asked was, "Hatovah hi imra'a? Is the land good? Is the land bad?" And this doesn't mean from a physical standpoint, from an agricultural standpoint. But what Moshe Rabbeinu was asking is in what ways is the land good to serve our purposes as servants of Hashem? How can it promote our spiritual development in this land? It's not a question of the land itself, but how does the land influence the people in it? And Rav Hirsch here mentioned specifically, for example, one characteristic that would fit answer this question would be the principle in the Chazal known as Aviro de Eretz Yisrael Machkim, that the very air in Eretz Yisrael can makes person wiser. It's easier to learn to accumulate wisdom in the land of Eretz Yisrael. So that's one. That would be an answer to this question of Hatovah hi imra'a. And then the question about the cities that they dwell in, Habamachanim b'mivtzarim, Rav Hirsch says that this is a question of what kind of livelihoods are available to people in this land beyond just the agricultural livelihood that is available to farmers. So here, the Moshe Rabbeinu is asking, if they live out in the open, that means they're farmers. Live in the cities, that means there's some sort of industry that's going on, and that's important to know in terms of how these different areas of society will help different people contribute to their avodas Hashem. And then also the final question, Umaha aretz hashmeinahi imraza hayesh ba'itzim ayin. Again, how will it serve our agricultural purposes, and what kind of sources of livelihood will we have? And then this has a bearing on Avodas Hashem as well. And so these are the questions Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to ask. Hashem's purposes of this mission were different from that of the people. The distinction between Viyasuru and Viyachperu, and Hashem was okay with this mission because he had a different idea in mind. He wanted the people to have a different focus. However, of course, we know they lost this focus. They focused on what their eyes saw rather than on what seeing things through Hashem's viewpoint, and they ended up making a mistake. And now we'll focus a little bit on the end of the parasha, where Hashem gave some mitzvos that would hopefully counteract these ideas, the mistakes that were made, and refocus the people on seeing life through the prism of Avodas Hashem, how Hashem controls the world, and how Hashem directs everything that happens to us in it, and Our focus should be on seeing things and how can they help us serve Hashem, rather than seeing things as how will we deal with the situation in the natural order of things. So the first mitzvah at the end of the parasha, after the story of the Meraglim, is the mitzvah of Nisachim. Nisachim, we know the Nisach HaYayin is the wine libation that was poured out on the Mizbeach. There was also that accompanied Olos and Shlamim Karbanos, also accompanied Karbanos Tzibur as well. And beyond just the wine, there was also flour and oil that came along with it. Every animal karban that was an Ola or Shlamim came, the owner had to also bring the flour with mixed oil and the wine to go on the Mizbeach. What's the reason for this? So Rav Hirsch explains that when a person brings a karban, he's dedicating his own personality to Hashem. He's dedicating his actions to Hashem, that he will now serve Hashem. But at the same time, the Torah requires him to be reminded that in addition to his nefesh, to his personality, everything that he has externally, everything outside of him that is given to him in life belongs to Hashem, was given to him by Hashem. And Hashem controls his fate, controls everything that he has in life. And he brings his nesach of dagon, tirosh, v'yitzhar, of flour, oil, and wine. These are these three represent three levels in life. The grain, the flour, represents the basics of existence, the basic subsistence in life. The oil is symbolic of prosperity, it's a richness of life, and wine is symbolic of happiness. Again, beyond that, beyond prosperity, to a feeling of satisfaction in life. And a person who brings a karban, dedicating himself to Hashem, but also at the same time dedicates these ideas, his existence, his prosperity, his happiness, he recognizes that they all come from Hashem, and that the only route to acquiring these three things are through serving Hashem, through dedicating his personality to Hashem. Then he will acquire through the means of Hashem, through Hashem's divine providence, his subsistence, and beyond that, prosperity, and an even higher level, his happiness and satisfaction in life. And if he commits to fulfill Hashem's will, then he will have all these things. Rav Hirsch points out that the nesachim of wine are poured into the Mizbeach. They were poured into a hole in the top of the Mizbeach and went down into the foundations of the Mizbeach itself, which the Mizbeach, of course, was hollow. The Kohanim would go down there every certain number of years, periodically, to clean it out. But the wine went into the depths of the Mizbeach to show that happiness, represented by the wine, is not just a goal in and of itself in life, but happiness is the foundation upon which we can build our avodas Hashem. We can use the happiness as a springboard to serve Hashem better. Hashem gives a person happiness and satisfaction, not as that's his ultimate goal. He can sit and be happy and enjoy himself and just put his feet up and be happy. But the idea is that when he experiences happiness and Hashem has given him a good poor lot in life, and things are going well, he can use that as a way to kickstart rising to a higher level in Avodas Hashem as well. So the happiness doesn't just sit on top of the Mizbeach as the crowning glory of serving Hashem. It goes down to the foundations of the Mizbeach, and the Mizbeach is built upon that, upon the representation of his happiness. Similarly, it rehearses that the Shira sung in the Beis HaMikdash was tied to the Nisachim. They would sing, the Levim would sing at the moment the Nisachim were being poured out on the Mizbeach. Again, this happiness is being directed towards Hashem, and that is why that is connected. And as we mentioned in the beginning of this discussion, that the Nisachim immediately follow the story of the Meraglim, because this is where the Meraglim tripped up. Their attitude was that Hashem isn't in control. but they just view the world through the natural order and the consequences of what would happen if they faced an armed enemy in powerful fortified cities, and they were scared of what would happen when they went up against these people. But the Nesachim remind us that our fate in life is determined by Hashem, and everything that we have comes from Hashem. And it reminded the people not to make that mistake. Again, right, and Rav Hirsch says that the Neshet Nesachim is identical to the statement that Kalev made upon the spies' return to the Jewish camp. And Kalev says in Perek Yudal Pasuk Ches, Im chafetz banu Hashem v'hevi osanu el aretz zosum sana lanu eretz shehizav aschal v'dvash. If Hashem wants, if Hashem is happy with us, He will bring us into this land and give it to us, the land that is flowing with milk and honey. If Hashem has desire, if Hashem is happy with us, and Hashem wants to give it to us, He will do so. And the natural conditions are immaterial, because Hashem can do whatever He wants. And everything that we have comes from Hashem. And this is especially true in Eretz Yisrael. We feel that the connection of our obedience to Hashem to our fate in life. We read this in Kriyat Shema every day, and in connection with this Dagon Tirosh V'Yitzhar as well, these aspects of life. We read in the second parashah of Kriyat Shema, V'Yom Shemot Tishmuel Mitzvosai Hashem Nochim Mitzvah Eschem Ayom. If you fulfill, that you listen to Hashem, to the mitzvos that Hashem commands this day, and so on. And we read it, and it says, I will give you the rain, I'll give you Dagon Tirosh V'Yitzhar, right? And all these things come as a result of Hayom Shema Tishmu Mitzvosai. So this connection of our fate to our ability to serve Hashem is what's important, not necessarily the appearance that we see when viewed through the prism of what should naturally happen. And because to reflect the idea that this is more, we can sense this in an even greater way in Eretz Yisrael specifically, that's why Rav Hirsch says, the parasha begins, parasha Nesachim begins, in Perek Tetzvav, Pasuk Beis, Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'martalehem, speak to b'nei Yisrael, tell them, Ki sovou el Eretz Moshevo Seichem asher ani nosim lachem, when you enter the land that I'm going to give to you, and so on. It then goes on to describe that you shall bring Nesachim with your karbanos. It's connected to Kisavo El Eretz Moshevo Seichem, because the message of Nesachim is extremely important in Eretz Yisrael, where our ability to retain the land, to serve Hashem, to retain the land, to flourish in the land, to succeed in the land, and find prosperity in the land, is governed directly by V'Hayom Shema Tishmu Mitzvosai. And that's the message of the Nesachim. And that's why it follows on the heels of the story of the Meraglim. The final mitzvah in this week's parasha is also similarly connected to the story of the Meraglim, but first we have to understand the mitzvah itself, and then we'll see clearly why this is so. The final mitzvah in this week's parasha, at the end of Perek Tesvav, is the mitzvah of tzitzis. And our first seeks to understand the mitzvah of tzitzis, and he describes this in greater detail in the essays and collected writings in Volume 3, which is the volume on symbolism. And here in the Chumash, it's explained as well. Rav Hirsch says that in order to understand the meaning of tzitzis, we have to understand the meaning of clothing, because tzitzis are nothing more than a heightened reminder to allow to fulfill the mitzvah, fulfill the meaning of the clothing in our lives. Because we see this, because the tzitzis are called tzitzis hakanaf. They are the, and Rav Hirsch says the tzitzis comes from tzitz, which means a sprout, to grow forth. So they are sprouting, these strings are sprouting forth from the garment itself. And so the idea is that we are meant to allow the message of the clothing to sprout forth and grow and bear fruit in our lives. What is the meaning of clothing then? So Rav Hirsch explains that clothing was given to Adam HaRishon after the Chet with the Eitz Hadas, Where did Adam HaRishon fail? So we see where Adam HaRishon failed, or where Adam and Chava failed, in the pasuk that describes Chava's coming to temptation, where in Parashat Bereishis said we read Vatereho Isha Kitova Eitz L'Machol B'Chisa Avahula Einayim. The woman saw the fruit was good to eat and it was desirous for the eyes. V'Nechmara Eitz L'Haskil, and it was desirous to contemplate. And so the transgression here is clearly in violation of what it says in our parasha in the connection with Mitzvah Tzitzis. V'lo sasuru acharei levavchem b'acharei einichem. Right, it was nechmod l'chaskil. It was tavahule einayim. So what happened is that Adam and Chava followed their senses. They followed their heart, their eyes. They liked what they saw. They were they used their senses to follow their senses to seek gratification, despite the fact that Hashem commanded them not to do so. They allowed their senses to control them, and not their mind, and not their intellect, and the ability to listen to Hashem. And they failed at this initial directive from Hashem, and in doing so, lowered themselves to the level of the animals who follow their instincts only, follow their senses. To determine what they do. And as Hashem banished Adam from Gan Eden, he clothed him as a reminder that his destiny is higher than that of the animals, that he's meant to cover his animal self, because that's meant to be subjugated to his higher calling as a human being, to his intellect. And the clothing serves as a reminder of the importance of V'lo sasuru achar levalchem v'achar einechem. It's that's the message that it captures and brings home to us, that we wear clothing in order to remind ourselves that we are different from the animals. Animals don't clothe themselves. Human beings do. Human beings are different. We seek to cover our animal sides, because that's not what should be governing our actions. Tzitzis, as we mentioned before, tells us to let this idea sprout forth. But how does it show this? It explains to us how we are to subdue our animal side, and to what we are to subdue it. So to understand this idea of how the tzitzis show us this, it's important to understand some basic numerical symbolism in Rav Hirsch's thought, specifically the numbers 6, 7, and 8, because the tzitzis, Rav Hirsch writes, are six white strings that are then wrapped around with a seventh white string and then an eighth thread that is made of techeles. Six, according to Rav Hirsch, symbolizes the physical world, the senses. This is because 6 days of creation of the physical world. The seventh, number seven, represents a connection with the divine, connection with Hashem. Of course, seventh day being Shabbos. And eight is specifically a Jewish aspect, a connection of Hashem and our Torah that Hashem gives to us. And this is because on the eighth day, begins mankind's destiny, mankind's calling to Hashem after Shabbos, after the creation. So eight takes six is physical, the physical world. Seven is the divine, and eighth is raising that up to a level of serving Hashem in accordance with the Torah. So the six strings, of course, the six strings that hang down off the corner of the garment represent our senses, our animalistic side. The seventh white thread and the eighth blue thread that wrap around it represent that these physical aspect has to be subjugated, subdued before the what Hashem wants, and specifically the Torah. And Rav Hirsch shows how Tcheles is the color blue is specifically a symbol of the Torah. We know that Tcheles is a reminder of Shemayim, Kisei HaKavod, and so on. It's a symbol for the Torah. Rav Hirsch showed this in his exposition about the Big Day Kahuna, about how that this was the function of Tcheles as well. And so these threads of 7 and 8. Wrap around the six, and they're wound around them to restrain them, control them, and that the six are bounded by the seven and eight. But they are not repressed entirely, because the halacha is that 1/3 of the length of the strings should be wrapped up, where in the area with the knots and the krichos, the part that's wound around, and 2/3 of the tzitzis hangs free, the strings that we let hang beneath the knots and the windings. And more hangs free than is wound up. And Rav Hirsch says this is because it's not a complete suppression of the animal side, but it's subordination. They are bound up, but more than that, we use them in the service of Hashem. Once they have been bound up, once they have been restricted, and then within the limits of their restrictions, and we use the senses and the physical side of our existence to serve Hashem. Once they have been guided and are in control of the Torah, of the 7th and the 8th threads. This is the message of the tzitzis, and this is how we define ourselves as human beings and as servants of Hashem. Yes, we possess a physical side, but we can use that physical side in service of Hashem if it is used with restraint, if it is used in accordance to the appropriate controls as dictated to us by Hashem. And this is how tzitzis is the natural extension of the, it brings the message of clothing to fruition, clothing which says, cover your animal side and remember v'lo susuru acharei levavchem v'acharei einechem asher atem zonim acharehem. And so the tzitzis show us how, that we subdue that to the standard of Torah, and thereby allowing our animal sides to be used appropriately within the right guidelines. This is referred to as the mitzvah tzitzis, applies only in the daytime. It doesn't apply at night. And the reason being because we are to serve Hashem in our active sphere of life, not just when we're resting. But the standard of an Eved Hashem is that when in the middle of his daytime activity, in the middle of his active behavior in life, in the middle of his creative side, when he is mastering the world, even in that area of life, he serves Hashem. That indicates the person, that marks person as an Eved Hashem. So it's in that area of life, that time of day, when it is daytime, that we are supposed to wear tzitzis. So now, to get back to the connection to the Meraglim acted also in a way that was the antithesis of this idea. The Meraglim went to Eretz Canaan and followed Acharei Levavam, Acharei Einehem. They followed their heart, they followed their eyes, they saw that the land was strong, they saw the inhabitants were large, they saw that it was going to, from a physical standpoint, it was difficult to conquer, and that's the prism in which they saw everything that they witnessed, and that's the message they brought back to the Jewish people. Kalev and Yehoshua had a different perspective, and this perspective is not Acharei Levavam, not Acharei Einehem, but Acharei Hashem. This is, of course, what Hashem says in the Pasuk to describe Kalev's ability to stand strong against the Meraglim and to remain faithful to Hashem. Says that Vayimoleh Acharai, that he was he followed me, so he was Acharei Hashem. Acharei Hashem is the way he viewed what he saw in Eretz Canaan. Of course, he saw the same thing they saw. He saw strong inhabitants. He saw fortified cities. He saw large giants, but he viewed it through the prism of Hashem controls the world, and not through his senses. He saw it through the lenses of Torah, so through the lens of the 7 and the 8, and not through the lens of the 6. And so, just as Adam Rishon failed in his mission of Lo Sasura Acharei Levavchem Acharei Einechem, and as punishment he was banished from Gan Eden, so too the Meraglim failed, and the Jewish people failed, at Lo Sasura Acharei Levavchem Acharei Einechem, when they gave up hope of being able to conquer Eretz Canaan, and as a result they lost out in Eretz Israel, just like Adam lost out on Gan Eden. And so here, after this mistake, Hashem gives the mitzvah of tzitzis to remind us of this message of lo sasuru. To remind us, the suru doesn't just mean not to follow temptation, but it means to it's a lesson of how we view the world, of what's important, what our priorities in the world are. Our priorities in the world are not what we see with our eyes and what we see with our heart. That is not how we view what's important in the world. But our view of the most important things in the world are governed by an understanding of Hashem, how Hashem can do what He wishes. Hashem's priorities are our priorities, and that is the message Tzitzit seeks to bring to us, to our lives, to redirect our thoughts away from our animal size of the body. But we cover the animal size of the body, and we enable enable that idea to sprout forth by using the animal side of our existence in the service of the seven and the eight, in the service of the Torah, of the Psil Techeles that is wound about them, and then enables them to hang freely together with the Psil Techeles once it has already been controlled and redirected by the Psil Techeles that is wound around them.